Life Audio.
Welcome to Christian Natural Health with naturopathic Dr. Lauren DeVille. Christian Natural Health is the podcast on how to get and stay healthy, God's way. You'll hear topics on nutrition, exercise, sleep, avoiding toxicity, meditating on scripture, what supplements to take, stress management, defeating anxiety and worry, how to reconcile Eastern medicine approaches with Christianity, and a whole lot more. Now, here's your host, Dr. Lauren.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Welcome back to another episode of Christian Natural Health. Today, I'm delighted to have Dr. Russell Witte joining us again. Dr. Witte is a professor of medical imaging, optical sciences, and biomedical engineering at the University of Arizona. Dr. Witte's experimental ultrasound and neural imaging laboratory devises cutting-edge imaging technology, integrating light, ultrasound, and microwaves to diagnose and treat diseases ranging from tendinopathies and arrhythmias to breast cancer. By integrating different forms of energy, special effects are created that enable ultrasound imaging of optical absorption deep in tissue, mapping current source densities in the beating heart, and elasticity imaging of human muscle and tendon for quantifying tissue mechanical properties. Dr. Witte's research further extends into nanotechnology and smart contrast agents, which have applications to functional brain imaging, cardiovascular disease, and cancer. Dr. Witte works closely with collaborators in the colleges of engineering, optical sciences, and medicine, as well as industry to develop cutting-edge imaging technologies that potentially improve patient care. Welcome, Dr. Witte. Thanks for joining us again.
Hi, Lauren. Great to be back.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so today I wanted to dive into the concept of healing frequencies. So give us a little bit of an overview, first of all, on the research that you're doing in your lab and potential future applications of it, since that sounds like it's quite relevant.
Yeah, so my research lab works with what I would call non-ionizing energy. So that would be light, sound, and electricity that is not include x-rays or gamma rays. So it's one spectrum or part of the energy that we work with, including the visible spectrum. And I use these energies to develop what I would say relatively new types of concepts in imaging. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when you combine these energies like light and sound or sound and electricity, you actually can generate different mechanisms. There's many physical effects that a lot of people are not that familiar with. And one of the things that we did a long time ago was research a lot of papers from 50 to 100 years ago and found all these interesting different mechanisms and started to take advantage of those. And so when you add these things together and start to integrate them, they can create new contrasts for imaging. And one of the things with ultrasound or sound, one of the disadvantages as a medical imaging modality is it has low contrast, meaning the soft tissue like fat and muscle tends to look really similar on an ultrasound image. So the contrast is low, okay. But otherwise ultrasound can have high resolution in terms of an image and can be done very quickly and within even a volume. And so one of the main themes of my lab is to look for new contrast mechanisms that use ultrasound, but be able to look at different information than a regular ultrasound an ultrasound image would look at. So as you pointed out in the introduction, we can use ultrasound to look at things like the absorption of light or use ultrasound to image electrical currents in the body. And so those are two of the modalities that we're working with. So even though I focus primarily on imaging, There are, of course, things where crossover where therapy and modulation of cellular activity becomes relevant. And because of that, I've had to do a lot of research, especially history, up to current state of the art in terms of theories of energy and healing. And it turns out this is a rich and diverse field, even though it's not something that's always taught in an academic setting.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's really interesting that it sounds like there's almost an inner conversion of multiple different types of energy. So there's the sound and electrical current and light. So you're able to use one form of energy to image another almost. Like, how, can you tell me a little bit more about what's the connection between sound and light?
Yeah, so that's a good question. And I think if you even ask like academics or professionals, they might even tell you they're very distinctly different. They're two different things. But actually, the two things I've already referenced will tell you directly that there's an interconnection. So there's something that I work with that's called an acoustoelectric effect. And it's a physical equation that directly relates the electrical properties of a material to a pressure wave. So when you're sending in a pressure wave, and a pressure wave doesn't propagate through a vacuum, it needs matter or something for it to propagate through. So by definition, as a pressure wave is going through, and that could be sound or ultrasound, it's actually changing the electrical properties of that material. It's reciprocal. You can't do one without the other. And in fact, I believe you can actually define a sound wave as a type of an electromagnetic wave that has different boundary conditions, because it's slower because it requires molecules or matter for it to propagate. But if you actually think of it as in terms of charge transfer, electrical charge transfer, as a pressure wave propagates, it's actually moving charge around. So you can then define the sound wave in terms of the movement of charge. So there's a direct relationship. And the way that I like to think of it is the boundary conditions are different. I would say it's a type of wave, and one can be converted into another depending on that interaction. And I just maybe the last thing to think about, and I think there's, you know, the great scientist Nikola Tesla and even Einstein had similar quotes, and they said energy cannot be created or destroyed. It can only be changed from one form to another. Okay. So that concept is important. And then we have to understand, well, what really is energy as well as a question.
Right. Okay. So to clarify, I think what I heard was that with sound, it has to propagate through a medium versus light, which can propagate through a vacuum, but in other respects, they're similar. Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, the physics are similar. They're governed by the same general wave equation is what you do. But as we know, sound propagates much more slowly than light. So it's in a different form. What causes it to slow down? Well, one of the things you just mentioned, it's being carried in a different way than a light wave. But I can send in a pulse of light and have that converted to a sound wave. That's the photoacoustic effect or thermoacoustic effect. And so that pulse of light gets absorbed and immediately gets sent back as a sound wave. It tells you that you can convert one to another. And it actually, it's fundamental to some of the imaging modalities that people are doing.
Oh, wow. That's so neat. Okay. So to the idea of healing versus damaging energy frequency. So what you just described on the electromagnetic spectrum, is there an overlap, first of all, between the frequencies of sound and the frequencies of light? Like, even though they might propagate through different types of mediums, would there be an overlap in terms of the actual frequencies themselves, or no? Or are they completely separate spectrum?
There is overlap, and I only kind of learned this recently, and I don't remember if I shared a figure with you. But there is a relationship between, obviously, when you have a frequency of light and the speed of light, you can relate that to a wavelength, like in nanometers or microns, you know, so microwaves or millimeter scale. Visible light is like 500 nanometers, right? So there's a wave relationship between frequency, wavelength, and the speed of light. Well, so if you are oscillating something, so which is a mechanical thing, which could be at a charge, you know, electron or molecular level, depending on what you're oscillating. If you oscillate those things at the equivalent frequency that you're doing light, then there's a corresponding sound frequency that's has a name for, like hypersound. At some point, it just becomes heat. And so I have a graph that relates the frequency of light to sound frequency and what term that's used. But I believe there's basically a 1-1 relationship in terms of the vibrational oscillations, which is a mechanical thing, to the light frequencies, which is obviously transmission of photons and waves itself. So there is, but it's not something that's typically shared in that way. But there is the relationship exists, yes.
Got it. Okay. And I think you introduced me to the concept of cymatics, which is the conversion of a sound into a picture, like a it looks like a fractal to me, more or less. Can you comment on what that is? Like, how does that actually happen? What's the math behind it?
Yeah, I believe Michael Faraday was the first to kind of discover and report on this, and he didn't really see an application for it, but he did spend some time talking about it. And then shortly thereafter, there was, and I forget the name at the moment, but there was a device that was created. I think it's called Tonoscope, but something like that. That it was intended to be used for deaf people as an aid. And it basically had sand inside, and it responded to vibrations or sound, and different images of the sand would form, and the person would be able to learn by the movements of the sand what kind of sounds were being created. So it was a device to aid kind of deaf people. So I think that's originally where it was and how it was used. This is back in the 1800s. And through the 1900s, and people can look up a lot of interesting research and things on cymatics, but essentially what that is it's a way to visualize the vibrations of an object, which is hard to do in general, but the traditional ways to do that use either like a droplet of water. That's one that people can find pretty easily on the internet. You put a drop of water on a slide, and then you have a microscope observing that drop on the slide. And then you introduce different frequencies. So you might start with a sine wave, like really low frequency, below sound, and then you start sweeping it higher and higher. And anybody can kind of do this probably with a camera. If you have an app on your phone, you can probably do this. There's actually devices you can buy that are actually cymatics, and you can use your phone to connect to it as well. But you could probably do this yourself. So as you're sweeping up in frequency, the vibrations of the water do not just take a random form. They take a what's called a cymatic kind of form, and they get more complicated as you sweep up in frequency. And there are certain frequencies where you can observe a dramatic transition in the geometry. And again, Faraday talked about these transitions. I think the transition is named after Faraday, whatever. And so you can continue to do this. And so you're basically just observing a water droplet and these interesting patterns. And if you actually look at it more carefully, they do obey certain laws related to sacred geometry, Fibonacci sequence, golden ratio, which ultimately here we might talk more about, but it's these patterns are everywhere in nature. And the physics are pretty well defined in terms of how the structures form. Of course, if you're looking at a water droplet, it's more like a two-dimensional thing that you're looking at. Of course, this would be happening in three dimensionals. And the physics are simply related to the vibrations of the water droplet and the boundary conditions, because there's air, water, slide, right? So if you change the boundary conditions, you're going to get a slightly different pattern, although the general idea will continue. And the other interesting thing about this, especially when you want to think about this as a healing modality, is that these patterns continue all the way from the macro scale all the way down to atomic level. So vibrations are happening at all scales. And from an imaging standpoint, you don't always think of that, because as an imaging, you think there are limits, like a diffraction limit in terms of wavelength and how well you can focus with a lens or something. But this isn't about necessarily imaging. This is about recognizing the physics of what's happening. And you are creating vibrational modes by having the sound. And then essentially what you're visualizing under, in this case, a microscope, would be the standing waves of sound bouncing back and forth across the boundaries and overlapping themselves and creating interference patterns across the droplet. Okay.
Yeah.
Now I say that I use a water droplet as an example. Of course, you could use sand and you can do the same kind of thing. But now when we want to take that idea and concept to a living system or a human body, What you have to recognize is we're mostly made of, for example, water and cells, right? And so when you play sound and you feel that sound, it is going everywhere in your body, and all of those, all of that, all of the molecules, et cetera, are responding to that sound in some ways. Now, what we don't know in terms of discussing this is are there certain patterns or geometries that promote healthy living, and are there certain geometries or sounds that could be adverse or disharmonious to a living system? And normally I think of like homeostasis, right? If you're healthy and you continue that, but if you start to deviate from that, the question is, are you building up frequencies that may be not in balance with nature or life? And this concept, of course, goes back thousands of years, but certainly to the 1800s, and you know, where these kind of ideas were being discussed about that.
So before I get into drilling down into some of what those might be, can you give our listeners kind of a background on how the Fibonacci sequence, the golden ratio, phi, things like that correspond to what you're talking about?
Yeah, so all of those have a very strict and specific mathematical relationship. And you can define those in mathematics. Of course, Fibonacci is maybe the easiest one in terms of math. It's a spiral with a very specific curvature as it expands, and you can look at the area in two dimensions of the spiral, and you start with a one and a two in terms of area, and then you add the previous two numbers, so you get one, two, and then three, and then you get two, three, and five, and then three, five, and eight, and then you can create your spiral related to that. Well, you can do spirals, you can do triangles, there's different forms, you can do this in three dimensions. Okay, so that's fundamentally the mathematics of it. But what's interesting is that simple formula and relationship is found everywhere in nature. Everywhere you go, the spirals, the hurricanes, the sea mollusks, the nautilus, you can open up, fruit and see the same sort of sacred geometry. Now, I was referring to the spiral, but the Fibonacci relates to golden ratio 1 to 1. There you can define one and have the other, and the phi and all these other things. They're direct, you know, they're square roots. There's ways to define these from what I just said, which is very strange. That how why does nature have this very specific and strict non it's non-linear, but it's this relationship, right? Where does that even come from? You know, why don't we talk about this more? But the other aspect of it, where you can see this everywhere in nature, is the bifurcation of lines. So I'm thinking like blood vessels, like dendrites in the brain, like rivers in nature. You can actually predict on average where the rivers or the vessels in your heart or in your body will bifurcate. And again, it's related to golden ratio. So as you extend along the stem of the line, you take that a golden ratio, you can predict where it's going to branch off. And it relates to golden ratio. And again, on average, there might be a little bit of variation, but when you do the average, you end up getting the same sort of relationship. Okay, so those are two different ways you can think of this very interesting, what people call sacred geometry, or that are related to these patterns. So once you recognize they're everywhere, and there's another term in science that is more common, biomimicry, and that's looking at biology and trying to mimic its form and function, right? How a bird flies versus, like, say, an airplane, right? And so military and companies have been very interested in biomimicry. Well, this is another aspect, and I think it should be part of our conversation when we start to think about health and disease and the structure of an organism, but it's almost rarely talked about in any routine academic setting these days. But it seems to be at least an important question we should be asking and looking at the history of that.
It certainly seems like the fingerprints of God to me. But just so to clarify my own understanding, so you said that the Fibonacci sequence, for the sake of our listeners too, so it's the sum of the two numbers before it as it continues, one, two, and then two, and then three. The 1 plus 2 is 3, 2 plus 3 is 5, etc. And then the golden ratio, as I understand it, is the relationship between any two numbers that are next to each other in the Fibonacci sequence, I think, right?
Right, it's 1.6 whatever. So anybody can look at what that number is, but it's a very specific, it's a non-rational number like pi. And then pi, some people have said that it's hard to connect pi itself to the golden ratio, but there are people and scientists that argue against that there is a relationship between pi itself and the curvature. And I would say that may be controversial, but I think it would be interesting to look at some of the arguments people made and questioning the very specific value of pi when you go out several digits. But I don't want to get into that. But yeah, if you start talking about relating pi, which is an irrational number, to these other ones, it even gets more interesting.
So back to the idea of the cymatics. So what you're describing when you said that is you go down to the cellular level, it's consistent. That's essentially the definition of a fractal, right? Is that what a fractal is?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a chaos pattern and it's a fractal. Absolutely.
So do fractals always follow any something related to the Fibonacci sequence in some way, or not necessarily?
It doesn't have to. I mean, the mathematical equation, you can download little programs that will create fractals. I don't believe they have to obey the sacred geometries that we're talking about. You can A fractal really just means that a pattern repeats itself over and over again at different spatial scales. That's essentially what a fractal is. So I would say that this would be a specific type of fractal.
Got it. Okay. So, and then when we see these perfect images of the fractal, if they, okay, let me back up a little bit. So, my understanding was that with the Fibonacci sequence, that also helps to define conceptual concepts like the color wheel and musical tones of a scale and the periodic table and things like that as well. That's true, right? Is that?
It can. I'm not sure. Let's, working backwards, the periodic table as presented is on a very Cartesian grid. And we really need to look at the periodic table because there's been many versions of the periodic table.
Oh, is that right?
The Russian scientists that created the original periodic table had additional elements in addition to hydrogen. And when and why those were removed is a question, which it may relate to some other things we talk about. But also things people like Walter Russell, who was a brilliant scientist, Einstein and Tesla talked about Walter Russell. He had a very different way of laying out the elements again as a spiral in a more sacred geometry sort of relationship that had a lot more interesting ways to look at the elements in terms of frequency, in terms of things that we're talking about. And you can find this online and download with. And Walter Russell, I think people can look up his periodic table, lays out the elements in a very different way, in a more spiral form that allows you to think of the elements and the relationships in a more profound, complex way. Looking at, again, sacred geometries that you may not be able to see if you look at the traditional periodic element. So, periodic table. So I think it's that by itself is an important because I think things are hidden in sometimes the way things are presented. And I know that you had asked for something other than periodic table in your last question, and I forget what it was.
The others were about musical tones in a scale and also color. And so specifically where I'm going with this is the concept of when it comes to what frequencies are healing and what frequencies are not healing, I'm wondering if there's a relationship because we certainly understand the concept of clashing colors versus complementary colors and disharmonic tones, like dissonant tones versus harmonic tones. Is there any relationship between that and the idea of a healing versus a non-healing frequency, or could there be?
Right. So again, I recommend people look at history of things and study this because that's where things get exciting. And the things that people knew 1,000, 2,000 years ago are going to blow your mind because we need to revisit that and rethink that. Because the reason that Pythagoras created the musical scale was not for entertainment purposes, it was specifically for healing purposes. And he found, and how did they know this? So where did this come from? Again, we have to read Pythagoras and what he was writing, in particular. But he was able to find different effects with different sounds, and through, I don't know if it's trial and error or was based on theory, These things were predominant in society, at least in Greek and in that area of the world. And so these sounds were recognized as healing, and also recognizing other sounds that might be disharmonious to support a more diseased state of the body. So this was already being discussed and looked at and acknowledged and recognized as a kind of a science in some ways, right? And then the idea of frequencies and light and colors of light, again, there's probably different ways to look at it. Well, actually, before we get to light, I'll just say with sound, I think if people look at like the Chinese symbol for medicine, and I believe music, and I usually have a slide that shows this, they're almost exactly the same. So in the Chinese medicine, in the Chinese history, they also clearly recognize this relationship between healing and medicine and sound too. So there's a whole history there we need to look at. Now, in terms of light, again, we can go back to the Greeks. Ptolemy was one of the first, I believe, to talk about how colors affect emotions. And he created this spinning wheel that had a hot coal, so it was like red, I think. And he talks about it in Optica, one of his publications, and it was a spinning wheel. And depending on the frequency of this wheel, he'd have people sitting around like watching it. And I don't know if it's like hypnosis or something else, but he would notice that certain frequencies would create certain emotions. Like people would start to like laugh or get depressed or get anxiety. And so he reported this, and it had to do with the frequency that these things were was spinning. And I do know that even today, military and other people even still reference Ptolemy's work from there. So, and then of course there is a whole history and field of color therapy, especially in this country, going back 100 years. There were books written, and it was very controversial. They went after a lot of the people that were teaching those schools, and yet they were partnering with allopathic doctors, especially surgeons, and healing. When you create a scar, and to apply certain colors of light would enhance the healing process. And people, famous surgeons would testify on behalf of the people that were teaching this, and so but people were going after them because they were saying they were quacks, etc. And they were teaching, and they had schools across the country teaching these things. So it became a very controversial area. But the whole key is we have to go back and start to look and present and share this information as important information, maybe as important as thinking what the next big research grant, multi-million dollar grant for funding at a lab at a university. I believe we need to put money towards investigating history and having a much more open conversation, not just with academics, but general public about what all this information, and start asking questions about, how these things worked, where did they go, and what do we know that we don't know today?
Right, absolutely. So, by way of analogy, possibly, with what you just described, I know that, so back to the concept of what frequencies are healing and which ones are not. So, within the electromagnetic spectrum, my understanding is that in the extremely low frequency range is things like, various different types of EMF, radio frequencies that we know are potentially damaging. But that's also kind of where the Schumann resonance of the Earth is, and our brain's theta waves all the way up to beta waves for focus. And some of the things that I've read have implied that part of the reason why EMF can be so damaging is because it's actually influencing those brain waves such that, and I don't think that's the whole reason, but might be almost speeding them up in potentially damaging ways relative to the things they should be tuned to. Am I on the right track at all as far as this?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Because, so obviously electromagnetic waves, especially pulsed or modulated waves, can affect not just the body, but materials in many, many different ways. So we have to look at different aspects of this, and it's not just necessarily one thing. But let's just think of a living system or a human being or the brain, for example. As you mentioned, there are certain frequencies associated with thinking in the brain. And most of us know, like EEG waves, we put on these helmets that people can buy now pretty cheaply. And what the kind of frequencies that you're measuring are things on the order of hertz, so a couple cycles a second or even slower. I mean, when you're sleeping, you got slow delta waves, which are even slower frequencies. And then they can extend up into hertz or tens of hertz. maybe even up to 100 hertz, especially when it gets to a disease state, you can get gamma oscillations. So you have delta, alpha, beta, gamma, and these are just frequency bands which are well known in the brain. And those are the ones that are mostly studied, although I'm not sure they're the only ones, but those are the most common ones. So if you start doing things with any of these energies we're talking about and start modulating or pulsing them at these frequencies, it makes logical sense that you can start to interfere. Now, interfering could be promoting something, maybe promoting sleep because you want to go to sleep, but it also could promote something you don't want, like insomnia and keeping you awake. So what that means is, and as we know with EEG signals, certain bands are associated with certain types of emotions, like a hypnotic state is alpha frequencies, right? So if you're unaware of things and you have external fields that you cannot see, of course, you could do things with light as well and have an effect, but things that are not visible and you're not aware of that, absolutely these waves can have an effect on your emotions without you even knowing it. Oh, I feel depressed today. Well, it could be because you actually had something to make you depressed, or it could be you're pounded by certain frequencies that are putting you in some state. And those bands of frequencies, there is, these are fingerprints. So each person's brains are a little bit different. And so you may respond a little bit differently. So there's a lot of reasons why you might get differences between people. So that's universal for any type of wave, because it doesn't matter what the original frequencies that we're talking about, whether it's microwaves, visible light, even sound, right? If you modulate that sound so that you have a carrier frequency like radio, right? The carrier frequency is when you tune your radio and you put that number and it shows that on your screen. That's just tuning to the carrier frequency. The things that we were talking about before are primarily the carrier frequency. Okay, well, now you're just tuning into that. But what really you want to pay attention to is the modulations on that frequency, right? So you turn your radio to a certain frequency in megahertz on your dial. That's not the interesting thing. That's just tuning in. What is interesting is the information that's being propagated on that carrier frequency. So it's the same thing with electromagnetic fields or sound. What's really probably most important, especially for related to your question, is what are those modulation frequencies? And it could be something that just happens to be noise, and it's on a cell phone or something that happens to be modulating that's kind of interacting with cellular communication. And we're talking about brain, but it's all cells are actually using these energies for communication. So then you have to say, well, you got to know the details of what that's going on, and are there certain frequencies that are maybe good or not so good for you? And so you got to look at the modulations itself, which we actually for microwaves, which is one of our other podcasts, we talk specifically about microwaves and 5G. That's the first thing in terms of cognitive and thinking is how the modulation frequencies are affecting it. Now, I just want to say that there are also certain things with the carrier frequencies themselves that we also need to look at. And as we talked about last time, and just briefly, the carrier frequencies of microwave radiation, the gigahertz sort of frequencies, have other properties that make it especially reactive to the human body. So, meaning the carrier will react in a certain way, and now you're modulating it, meaning you got two things going on, which you can understand why that could have a particular effect on the body. So with microwaves, the two things that people want to know is that the wavelengths of microwaves range from, let's say, millimeter to centimeter scale. Okay, so now you're interacting with structures in terms of resonance, millimeter, centimeter scale. So that's like the organ level surface of your skin. Okay, so the wavelength is consistent with a living system. But the other thing is that the water molecule, is highly absorbed by microwaves. Okay, so that means that a microwave getting into the might go far through the air, especially if it's dry air. You can go miles or tens or hundreds of miles with certain microwaves in the air, but as soon as it hits water or a living system, it immediately gets absorbed. It can't penetrate very far. And that absorption, one of the main things that will happen is it gets converted to heat. But as I just mentioned, there are other things that most people don't think about, including regulation agencies often, is that the modulation and the pulsing is also affecting cells, brains, and in other ways. for the reasons that I just said. So those low frequencies that you mentioned, they're physiologic, they're brain related, they're also cellular related frequencies. You start jamming communication, you start affecting its function.
I see. I see. Okay. So another possible analogy, at least you can clarify for me if it's not, but somebody listening to, let's say, classical music or Gregorian chants versus like death metal. Is there a difference in terms of the, it sounds like what you're saying, that's what the modulation is. They could be on the same carrier wave, the same radio might be playing those same things, but the modulation is what information they're sending, which is the different type of music. And that modulation can end up jamming signals and interfering or having a harmonious effect with the signaling in the cells themselves. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. I think
Okay.
so. And Amaro Emoto, who did most of the study on water, right, and water droplets and this whole controversial thing in water memory, which is originally published in Nature by Jean Benveniste, the most controversial paper probably ever published in Nature. This is around 1988. And it was never retracted, but it created a firestorm. But Amaro Emoto, who's also controversial, but other people have repeated some of the things. It's the idea of taking that water droplet and giving intention and playing sound or saying something to the droplet, and then through a crystalline process, freezing that water and then looking at the structure of the water under a microscope or in other ways. And what they found was when you play things that are discacophonous, if that's the right word, versus harmonious, like you said, you will get very different patterns. One will more obey beautiful, I mean, I know it's subjective, beautiful patterns, and others will look like, you know, crazy, weird structures and patterns. So I would encourage anyone to try to do that and look for yourself and then think about what that means. But you're basically, when you say something or, you know, we get into attention, what is intention? And is there energy involved in attention? It gets into a different thing. But if you see a relationship and you can replicate it in some sort of repeatable fashion independently, then it's an observation that needs to be explored. And from a scientific perspective, rather than ridiculing something or ridiculing the person, which was an ad hominem attack, which I don't think it's a good idea, we need to use the scientific method and understand things better. So so that I think that's where. So now if you're looking at a water molecule, again, we're 70% water on average or something like that. And our Earth is 70% water. Then we start to have to think carefully about how sound affects the molecules and everything on up in our body. And if it does affect a single molecule, it can affect your entire body because it's all being receiving that energy. And I'll just add one more thing. You know, historically, we talk about Pythagoras who came to modern times, but I would encourage listeners to look carefully at the history of sound in between that time, specifically at churches. We're familiar with bells, church bells, liberty bells, etc., that ring through cities in Europe, etc., as well as the organ pipes in churches that would resonate not just through the buildings, but through the entire cities. And people would come and sit there and just absorb these frequencies. And of course, solfeggio frequencies are fundamental to the organ pipe and the church organs. And I think if you look historically, these were not just religious buildings, these were healing centers. And people went there and wanted these sounds throughout their city as a way for maintaining health. And I think that's an interesting, just again, looking history says, well, what did people know then that we don't know now?
Oh, absolutely. So when I was in med school, I learned about this. It was a documentary called What the Bleep Do We Know? And after watching that, a couple of my classmates and I did this really non-scientific experiment, but we had two apples and we put one of them in basically in the same area. And one of them we would speak blessing over. And the other one, so one of my roommates had a very foul-mouthed boyfriend and he would curse at it every single time he passed by. And we took pictures of them a couple of weeks later and it was amazing. We didn't do anything really different, but one of them looked pretty healthy and the other one was all shriveled up and rotted. So we got that idea, I think, from that video. So it was just an interesting idea of the power of words that you're
right. And it's something that anybody can try. I think you can do it with rice and let it grow. You know, it was like 10 years ago. I believe she's still an adjunct professor in optical sciences. I have to look up, but she was a local professor in optical sciences. And we invited her to give a talk to my lab, kind of like I invited you. And she presented some of her optical techniques, but one of the things she talked about, which I knew when I invited her, is that she had herself done experiments exactly the way that you were doing with plants. And she said, "This is crazy, but I'm gonna try it." And she would just have plants grow and give put notes or different intentions, and she could see dramatic differences, and she kept doing it. And it's like really bizarre. It's like, okay, there's something to this. So even a mainstream person can try these things and see this observation and start to ask questions, right? How does this work? And then I think there's absolutely physics. There's things we can get into once you get past all the conspiracy stuff, how that's impossible sort of stuff. Then we can have a real conversation.
Absolutely. And back to what you kind of alluded to, the concept of pulsed electromagnetic frequencies. So can you touch on that briefly? How does that differ from the physics of normal frequencies, the pulsing in
Yeah,
terms
exactly. So what we do know, like in the field of microwaves, continuous wave microwaves does not seem to be as damaging. I'm not saying go, your microwave oven uses a continuous wave to heat things up, so it's a continuous wave, and that leads to the heating. But when you start to break up the wave and starting and stopping it, you get transitions. So that would be just a pulse on and off. Well, those transitions, I believe there's different physical effects going on in the rise and fall when you do that. And we can get into that as well at some point. It's more complicated. But pulsing is also how your body does communication. It doesn't have continuous waves, although there may be things like carriers. But if there's a carrier, it is again the modulation, and a modulation, a pulse are kind of to me related. A pulse you might define as just a short on time and an off time, where there's a ramp and a
A
ramp
zero
on,
and
ramp
one.
off. But you think of radio and the information you're listening to, that's a continuous modulation. I mean, it can be an amplitude, but let's think of, a continuous amplitude modulation of that wave. And I believe that your cells, your organs, your body, of course, EEG is related to this. What you're looking at on an EEG trace is a modulation of that carrier frequency, and then you can look in bands, but those are not continuous. An alpha frequency from your brain is not a continuous thing. It's being broken up by other frequencies and on and off time. So I believe, with a continuous wave, if it just have a constant continuous wave, it's very difficult to transmit information that way. The information has to come from the pulsation and modulation of the wave,
Got it.
which is what we want to be paying attention to. And also just another distinction between like natural frequencies that the earth creates has different properties than, we just talked about nature, right? So natural frequencies from the sun, et cetera, are generally different than man-made frequencies, especially when it comes to microwaves. I mean, we know we see antennas, right, that are a dipole or monopole, and that creates like an oscillation through an electrical field that's being modulated, and then the microwaves come out of an antenna. The type and the behavior and the properties of that wave behave very differently than a naturally generated, and there aren't many microwave naturally generated sources on Earth, but it behaves very differently, and there's polarizations and other things, and there's some evidence that if you change the polarization, you might make some of these less interfering with the human body, and so there are things out there that people are looking at and that. So obviously this gets into a much more complicated topic, but there are many components to an electromagnetic wave, a spatial and temporal, that also need to be looked at, and how it may react to a biological system.
Got it. Yeah. And I'd read that the pulses sometimes can be more damaging physiologically than the continuous wave to a person. So, like, that's one of the arguments that I've heard against smart meters, for example, because it's more pulse as opposed to continuous signaling. And that for people who are electrochemically sensitive can be more of an issue. But then on the flip side, there are like biomats that I assume operate under the pulsed electromagnetic frequencies as well. So some are good and some are bad, kind of like what it sounds like you're saying. It just sort of depends on, again, the frequency and the information. Is that true?
No question. And there's plenty of peer-reviewed literature that indicates pulsed electromagnetic fields are potentially more damaging. And again, it depends on, And then there are also evidence that pulse, other types of pulsing, again, frequencies and the way and the energy and the intensity and the properties can actually be healing. Because as you know, I mean, before we got on, we talked about the body electric and Robert Becker's work.
Right.
This is why it's so important to look at this. There's clear evidence that certain types of electromagnetic fields, with all the different properties that it has, is disharmonious to life and living systems. And there are other types of fields that can promote health and mechanisms like tissue regeneration. And it's all in the details. And part of that relates to the sacred geometries and natural frequencies. And part of that could be through trial and error and understanding biological systems. The only way that we're going to come to common ground on that is to have the conversation, apply the scientific method, study the history, and start doing and getting more people involved in doing controlled experiments with this, with the idea that recognizing these are not easy experiments to do, because to control electromagnetic wave requires expertise that most people don't have. It requires expertise in biology. And the two together, there just aren't a lot of people out there that know how to create these systems and then create controlled experiments where we start to do this research, whether that's in an animal or a human or a cell culture. And then to do this in independent trials at different places in the world, right? That it's more complicated than a standard, you know, experiment that might be done in the biomedical field. So there's a lot of things that we have to think about.
Right. Yeah. And I just have an intuition, and it sounds like you do as well, that the sacred geometry and the Fibonacci sequence and the golden ratio have something to do with which of these frequencies are healing and which ones are damaging. And the concept of, I mean, as I saw, as you kind of alluded to with those water studies, if you have a dissonant sound, the cymatic image breaks almost, and it goes from something that's beautiful to something that looks chaotic. And there's something to that. There's got to be a pattern that we could probably identify that could say these frequencies are beneficial, these are not, and it may have something to do with the natural frequencies of what the earth typically promotes versus all of this extra, these jamming signals that we've polluted our environment with. So,
yeah, and you mentioned this Schumann resonance before, I think it's 7.83 hertz, and this is just an observation that the earth itself is alive. It is pulsing at this frequency, and 7.83 hertz, that frequency is also a dominant frequency in the human brain and in biological systems in nature. You can find this frequency. So it's like we're in sync and resonating with the earth, and is the earth affecting us? Are we affecting the earth, or is there something else that's affecting all of us? But it's very more than coincidental that we all share this frequency. And yes, people have talked about it shifting and moving around. And we know that if you go up in frequency or down in frequency, right, you go towards hypnotic states, to more active learning, to anxiety, right? So these frequencies become important in understanding how that works. But and Schumann was someone that studied this and actually made a lot of important discoveries on people and doing frequencies on college, I mean, experiments in college students, et cetera. So again, another branch of history that we could look into and where this comes from and how people looked at that in terms of health and psychology and things like that.
Yeah. Well, and from my worldview, of course, one of the things that comes to mind as I hear about all of this is when God says, let there be light, and sound converts into light, and then it eventually converts into physical properties. And scripture tells us that, you know, God formed by faith, God, we understand that the worlds were framed from what is invisible. So it sounds like quantum physics is essentially kind of bearing some of this out, that all of these various different frequencies and types of energy are interconverted from one to another.
And I forget, I'm not the best with the Bible, but I think in Genesis, sound came first, right? There was the word.
The word,
and then,
yes.
The word, and then the word, the sound created light or something. So again, exactly. This whole idea, how do you create sound from light? Well, I have an idea. I mean, we can show you, sure. We didn't mention this, but there's sonoluminescence. This is generating a sound, usually a focused sound beam. You can do this in water. You can even buy a system and do it yourself. You focus ultrasound in water, and you can have a star illuminating light in the water through a process called sonoluminescence, and you can just have it there and people study this. So there it is. You're creating sound in water and creating light from that.
That's Fabulous. I love it. So if people want to add more healing frequencies to their lives, where do they start? What would you suggest? I mean, it sounds like music and getting outside into nature, but any other specifics that you would throw out there?
That's a good question. I think people need to think carefully what they are currently listening to in terms of sound, right? Because it's not just the vibrations, but the words and the meaning of words. All of this is information that can be projected. And I believe there's evidence that the words themselves can play a role in the health and thinking of a person. So I think the first thing is people need to pay more attention to what they're listening to. That could be music, it could be news, it could be somebody's voice, who knows. Just pay more attention to that, and be more cognizant that just the fact that you're paying attention and listening to that can have a profound impact on your body. That's also true with electromagnetic fields. There are people you can come and do assessments. I mean, I guess that's one level, to look at two things in particular in your home, and that is the levels of microwave radiation and the types of microwaves. We had this on another podcast. As I mentioned, there's been no environmental factor that's been more thoroughly studied than the effects of microwaves, especially pulse microwaves, on living systems. And so there really shouldn't be a debate on the adverse effects of this types of radiation. That doesn't mean you can't have your technology and be fine, but it is important to have a consent and know what we do know about the field. The other branch, especially in a home, is something called dirty electricity. And that has to do with power lines and having noise on the power lines that can be very disruptive to human behavior. And there are people that can test that. There are things you can do to mitigate and lower the effects of that. To me, the first thing is to look for and identify things that we know are not good for a healthy state. And some people are simply going to be more sensitive to that. I have different theories why that might be the case. So the first is to be aware of that, try to eliminate sources of noise that could be affecting you, especially if you have symptoms. People are looking at all kinds of things, and this could be one major role factor for some people that they're not even thinking about. So if you can mitigate, sometimes just going to a different place for a couple days and see if you feel better, then you need to look. And I know that you do this for a living. You need to look at this as a possible factor. And then thinking historically, what did people do for healing frequencies, like the organ pipes and solfeggio and, I know that people, for example, you mentioned classical music. I know people that are very difficult for them to focus and do homework if they're listening to classical music, because it somehow contradicts maybe left and right side of your brain or something. So there may be situations where something like that works, but maybe for studying you need something else. And I think maybe we can learn a little bit, but some of that is trial and error. But I think if people just do the simple things I just said and are aware of this and have that conversation, and then through trial and error, they may start to feel a lot better than they are now.
Absolutely. What have I not asked you that you want to make sure you leave with our audience?
Well, I mentioned informed consent, and I'm really pushing that concept. Rather than debating this being right or this being wrong, or allopathic or naturopathic or drug therapy or this, what I'm really demanding, whether it's medical or some other device, is that we all kind of stand behind fundamental principle that everybody has a right to be informed on the dangers, risks, benefits of any particular product or therapy before they choose to do that, and not to simply trust because an expert is promoting something. And to get away from the arguments against, for and against something, but simply promote that core value, and everybody get behind that, because I believe there are a lot of decisions that are being made, especially in the healthcare field, are simply because we aren't promoting and pushing that everywhere we go and hearing that and allowing people to get a device, a product, or a treatment without getting what we already know about that. And that should be required from a medical professional, from a company. But we seem to have lost that core value that used to be central, really right after World War II, right, with a lot of the things that happened. This was a theme that was being in our education promoted, but I feel like it's kind of disappeared. So for everything that we talk about, whether it's for education or health, let's have an open conversation and make sure we're providing that information. And I believe a lot of things that we talked about, of course, they could be used maybe in a harmful way, especially if it's a device. But in the end, a lot of the things that we talked about in terms of how color or sound can impact a human body tend to be very low levels. You don't necessarily need a lot of energy. It's about finding the right frequency and resonating with that frequency, and your body and your cells will respond to that. And so from that aspect, it's much safer than using something that would be intentionally harmful to try to kill something in your body to help it recover and heal. And if you can see changes within a few days or a week or two, you know, why wouldn't you at least try to do that as long as everyone's kind of thinking about that? So I think that's just an aspect. It's a core value thing and the way that we think about things and interact with people and talk about things, because I think it's important that we bridge conversation rather than trying to divide, especially the way things are right now in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. So where can people go to learn more about you and your work?
So I generally would, I just offer my personal email account is the best way, is rwitte, R-W-I-T-T-E at protonmail.com. And anybody can look my university website up for my professional stuff and my research. I think they can look me up at the University of Arizona and my name and can find that. So I think that's generally the best. And I'm always interested in meeting new people and collaborating and coming up with new ideas how we can bring this information out.
Amen. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Whitte. This has been great.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Are you looking for a holistically minded healthcare practitioner who truly treats root cause rather than symptom suppression? Unfortunately, even in the alternative healing professions, this isn't a given. That's why I've created wholehealthdoctor.com, a resource to help connect patients to healthcare practitioners in their area who share a root cause philosophy. Alternatively, most of the practitioners listed also practice telehealth. So if there isn't anyone local to you, you can still find a great practitioner to help you regain optimal health. Go to wholehealthdoctor.com. That's wholehealthdr.com. Type in your location or just the specialty that you're looking for and find the practitioner who's right for you.
Thanks for listening to Christian Natural Health. This show is run by you, so please write in with topic and guest suggestions for future shows. For more great content, subscribe to Dr. Lauren's blog at www.drlaurendeville.com or follow her on Facebook or Twitter at Dr. Lauren Deville. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to share it with your friends and give us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It really helps us to stand out so other people can discover great content as well. Have a great week and God bless you.
Hey friend, I'm Brooke McLaughlin, host of the Everyday Prayers podcast, a ministry of million praying moms, and I'm here to invite you to partner with God for the hearts of your children on the daily. Our goal at Everyday Prayers is to help moms understand and pray God's word. Join us each weekday as we share insights from God's word for today's Christian mom. Tune in to the Everyday Prayers podcast in your favorite app or by visiting lifeaudio.com.